We will not do the intro music. So this is the What the Pewter Report podcast. We are live from Keel and Curly. Is this officially Dover, or what is the actual city that we're in?
Plant City, Florida.
Thanatosassa.
Thanatosassa. Leave it to my man from PC to say that. We are having a great time out here. We got two Henry's beers. We got the great Keel and Curly wines. We got the delicious barbecue going on. It's a great spot.
From Smokin' Aces Barbecue.
It's funny, and not just the barbecue is good, but I hear the potato salad is hot fire. It's supposed to be amazing. We have some pictures going on as well. You know, I'm giving a little bit of filler because, you know, it's always painful to talk about the Bucks when they get their teeth kicked in. This is, of course, a PG broadcast, so we will be under PG-13. Complete control. Is it PG-13?
Yeah, it's PG-13.
Yeah, I need you guys to give me the sliding scale. What's great is I'm fortunate that I am with the experts. PewterReport.com has been covering the Bucks for what seems like an eternity. They are the de facto standard on Buccaneer news, media information, and inside details. So we're going to be talking about what happened behind the scenes. We all saw the misery on the field. This is what we call a water cooler session, folks. This is where we get that cathartic release. We talk about the pain. We go ahead and we explain it, and then we put it in a box. And then we put it in the closet, just like our self-image issues, because I don't wear spandex for a reason, and I don't watch the Atlanta game more than twice for a reason. So, welcome, Mark. Welcome, Scott. How are you doing tonight, guys?
Thank you. Doing good.
Doing well. As well as it can be expected after last night.
Well, you know, it was absolutely painful. Fans right now, and this is an interesting sort of challenge. You guys have faced this for much longer than I have. You're legitimate journalists, whereas I'm just sort of a hack podcaster. I take this stuff very personally. I'm more frustrated with the amount of jumping ship that's happening. While I'm mad, I mean, as a fan, you don't want to get curb stomped, and that's what happened. But at the same time, I have heard everything from burn the franchise to the ground and ship it out of town to Josh McCown may be an alien. I can't even tell you all the things I've heard. What are you guys hearing? What's your immediate takeaway?
Well, I'll tell you what, on the PewterReport.com message boards, there was an awful lot of bring back Shiano, bring back Dominic. Talk, which
I saw bring back Raheem.
Yeah.
You saw bring back Raheem?
I saw bring back Raheem.
Well, absolutely. If we go to 717, we could probably find him. Sorry. Did I say that out loud?
Well, you know, here's the one thing about, you know, the last three coaches, including Levy Smith. I did some research today. September has not been kind to these Bucks coaches. Raheem Morris, Greg Schiano, Levy Smith now at 0-3. Over the last 6 years, the Buccaneers are 5-15 in the month of September. They are 1-10 in the month of September over the last 3 years. So no matter who the coach, it has been a legitimate struggle. The only win being Greg Schiano's first game, the 16-10 victory over the Panthers in 2012. So September has been an absolutely horrific month for the Buccaneers, and I've got some bad news for you, Derek.
October's worse?
There's one more game in September for the Buccaneers. The Pittsburgh game is not in October. It's at the end of September. So it might be 1-11, unfortunately, for the Buccaneers in the month of September over the past 3 years.
I have to say one of the funniest, you know, we do a lot of work on social media like you guys. You guys are nearing 16,000 Twitter followers, as I understand it.
Yes, and we thank every single one of them. It's been great to have that many followers on Twitter.
You know, social media has absolutely changed the game. It's amazing. People go to Twitter now before they go to any mainstream media outlet to find out what's going on. That has pros and cons, obviously. But right now, with Pewter Report getting to close to 16,000, make sure you follow them at Pewter Report and get, you know, the most pressing Buccaneers news fast. But going into this game, I think there was a lot of hope that, we had lost the first two games, but we had had a legitimate chance at the end of those games to turn it around. We had a lot of injuries, but this was a chance to test our depth. Atlanta had not looked good the week before. We had heard some rumor that we would be better on turf than we were on grass. And instead, we looked like we were running in concrete. It wasn't just the offense, it was the defense.
Yeah.
What is your immediate takeaway, Mark or Scott? You guys can round robin this one. What was the biggest surprise, miserable experience out of the game?
Well, here's something I talked about in my SRS Fab 5 column, which came out today on PewterReport.com. And I've kind of been on this since the Rams game of last week. And I predicted the last two losses. I didn't think the margin would be as huge as it was last night. But the most troubling thing for me, people point to the pass rush as a problem for the Buccaneers, and it certainly is. You're without Michael Johnson, you're without Adrian Claiborne, you're without Gerald McCoy last night. Although Johnson played a couple snaps, but it was really kind of inconsequential. He's still testing that ankle. But here's the thing. You have a healthy secondary. You've got Jonathan Banks, second-round pick. You've got Alteron Verner, high-priced Pro Bowl cornerback. You've got Deshaun Goldson, high-priced Pro Bowl safety. You got Mark Barron, first-round draft pick as a safety. You have, on paper, talented cornerbacks and safeties for the secondary. The problem is, Derek, only four pass breakups this entire year through three games. Four pass breakups. That's criminal. If you look back last year, and Greg Schiano's defense admittedly was feast or famine, they either got sacks and turnovers aplenty, or they got torched. It was a feast or famine type defense. But actually, I think it was a better defense than what we've seen through the first three games of the season. Because at least last year, you had people contesting the ball while it's in the air. You had pass breakups. The Buccaneers had 73 pass breakups last year, an average of 4.5 per game. The Buccaneers, through three games, Derek and Mark, have a combined four pass breakups.
But like we've said,
they're on pace for 21 pass breakups this year.
But like,
so the secondary is not contesting anything.
But
it does go hand in hand with the pass rush.
It does, and that's exactly it. We've said it all along. In this system, you've got to have pressure from your front four. If you end up blitzing a linebacker or blitzing a safety, you expose holes in that secondary in a zone scheme, right?
You're right.
That's somebody out of a zone. Well, last night it looked like they were blitzing everybody because nobody was in the zones. I mean, it was just basically like 7-on-7 drills. But
you're right. But let me ask you a question, Mark. How was the pass rush last year from the front four?
Terrible.
It wasn't good, but they were playing man coverage.
They were
you
in
had
man
Darrell Revis.
It was terrible.
Well, this becomes
Revis, so the pass rush hasn't gotten any better.
You
and
put
the secondary's
four
gotten worse.
Darrell Revis's out there in Lovie Smith's scheme, and you don't get a pass rush. It's going to be exactly like it was last night.
I don't know.
This is a great transition though, and Scott, I read in your article about this pass breakup stat, which was really interesting. But one of the things I think we need to put on the table for discussion is, and I listen to a lot of talk radio. And I certainly am accosted because I hold fans to a high bar because I'm a pretty damn good fan. The Tampa 2. If I read one more time that the Tampa 2 is dead, that the game has passed the Tampa 2 by, people referring to our entire defense as the Tampa 2. The Tampa 2 is a coverage. It's a coverage model. It looks like 2 deep. It ends up being 3 deep. We run... I don't know what the numbers were last night, but typically we're in about 35 to 40% of the time.
Correct.
And we shift in and out.
Yes.
Now, against Atlanta, I couldn't tell. Watching that game, I was shell-shocked. But what's interesting is, like Mark alluded to, if you're in man, if you got guys in man coverage, you're going to have more opportunity for pass breakups. If you're in zone, if he gets time to throw and he hits that soft spot in the zone, the curl zones, the flats, yeah, they're going to be wide open.
A perfect example of that was at 3rd and 17.
Right.
That was a back-breaking play. Look, the Buccaneers had no chance even before that or after that. But you don't complete a 3rd and 17 in the NFL.
You shouldn't complete a 3rd and 17.
There's no play. What's your John Gruden thing? There's no such thing as a play call for 3rd and 9?
Absolutely.
What the hell would John Gruden say about 3rd and 17?
Exactly.
And they did it with ease.
Did it with ease. And even on 3rd and 9, Mark, they got a 21-yard pass to Julio Jones.
Right.
So, you know, when you have two backup quarterbacks, Derek, that complete over 70% of their passes against this defense. Then you have not a JV quarterback. You got the varsity quarterback in Matt Ryan. He completes a franchise record 87.5%. It's not just the pass rush. The ball is in the air. The secondary's got to do a better job of reacting. They got to do a better job of sticking to their guys and man and tightening up those zones. And they've got to break up passes. They've got to get upfield on third down.
But to me, third down
right now is way too easy for opposing offenses.
And you know what? We talked about this, Scott. Even during Monty Kiffin's days, there were yards to be given up between the 30 and the 30.
That's right.
All right, because it is a zone. And if Sapp didn't get there, Simeon didn't get there, Greg Spiers didn't get there, eventually even those NFC quarterbacks were going to be able to complete some passes in there.
Yep.
and march the ball. But they seem to tighten up down in the red zone.
That's right.
It's been terrible in the red zone. Last night in particular.
Oh, God, it was horrific.
It's been terrible in the red zone because you gave up what? Take away the Devin Hester punt return touchdown and the pick six. That's still six offensive touchdowns the Falcons had. And there was no field goals in there for the Buccaneers. Tampa Bay did a better job in week two of forcing the Rams to kick field goals. But last night, it was not apparent. There was no red zone defense. There was no defense, period.
You know, and I think the movie The Replacements is underrated, probably because Keanu Reeves is in it. But I tweeted quickly the concept of quicksand. These games happen. and people start to press, and things get worse. I don't know that anything could have gone wrong last night that didn't go wrong. When you get a deflected interception, and you're running it back, and Devin Hester strips the ball, right, and you get a first down out
and
of it.
And he recovers it himself.
He recovers it himself.
Yeah.
This was just a cacophony of errors. It was astonishing.
It could have been a bit worse, because as much as we want to praise Mike Lennon right now.
Your quarterback could have got hurt. Oh, never mind.
I mean, but Mike Lennon threw two interceptions
that were dropped.
That were flat out dropped.
Yeah.
So I, if you're looking for the silver lining, Lovie Smith said today in his press conference that Mike Lennon was that silver lining. And on paper, he had good statistics. 17 to 24, 70% completion, over 100 yards, and a touchdown. But the guy had two dropped interceptions. So as much as I would like to see him play next week and continue out the season, because I think the Buccaneers are at that point right now at 0-3. The playoffs are not going to happen this year. You might as well start evaluating the talent on the roster. And if he's the future, take a look at him right now. Give him 13 games to prove whether or not he's the guy. Because if he's not, then you got to spend that first-round draft pick on a quarterback.
He's not the guy. I just don't think he's the guy, to be honest with you.
I don't think he is either. I don't think he has that it factor. I think he could be a good quarterback.
Right.
And Mark, if you're going to have success with a good quarterback, you have to have a great defense.
With an all-pro offensive line and a lot of weapons, he can be a good NFL quarterback.
Yeah. And you can get to the Super Bowl as a good quarterback.
Right.
We saw Rex Grossman. We saw Trent Dilfer do that. But you have to have a dominant defense in order for that to happen. And so for Mike Lennon to stick around as that defense becomes dominant, and it's going to take a couple years, I think, for that to take place, I just don't see it. In this division, this NFC South, Eric, you've got Cam Newton in Carolina. You've got Matt Ryan in Atlanta. You've got Drew Brees in New Orleans. Until Tampa Bay gets a quarterback of that caliber, they're going to be the cellar dweller.
So I have to ask this question. It's a great transition. It's almost like we're professionals up here with these transitions. The big debate, one of the big debates right now is at quarterback. In the offseason, there was a huge debate about Mike Glennon or Josh McCown. Josh McCown will be painted with the brush of journeyman, always been a backup, blah, blah, blah. If you read only stats, you would believe this guy is a hack and he should only be a backup. If you go watch what the guy does in practice and in training camp, you realize he's got something special there. But what you've got to do is get someone who's talent and opportunity, the right situation. Kurt Warner was bagging groceries and will now be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Brad Johnson. Gannon.
Yeah, they happen, right? Yep. But you bring up a powerful point. I'm not a Mike Glennon fan. I don't dislike the kid. He seems like he's working hard. He's gotten better from last year, which is great. He is a prototypical pocket passer.
That's right.
He has an overvalued arm strength, but he is usually good at protecting the football, typically.
Yep.
But he has got to have a pocket, and right now our line doesn't give it to him. But what you guys have said, and what I think a lot of people are saying is, hey, we're not making the Super Bowl this year. That's not going to happen.
Yep.
If he is the quote-unquote quarterback of the future, you give him the reins at this point let him go.
I don't know that the Buccaneers believe that.
They might hope that
might be the case, but I don't think they believe that. I don't think there's any question the Buccaneers go quarterback early next year, and that's why I'm not in agreement with starting Glennon. Because McCown signed for 2 years. Let him see what he does this year. You're not gonna want to start your top five quarterback next year first game, right?
I've seen enough of Josh McCown, and I like Josh as a person, but the bad interceptions were there in the preseason. They've continued into the regular season. This offense is going nowhere fast with him. I like Josh. I wanted this to work out. I wanted him to succeed. I wanted him to be that next Rich Gannon, Brad Johnson, but I just don't see it.
I don't think he's been given a fair opportunity, to be honest. Those five, by the way, can you believe Scott and I don't always agree on things?
I love that there's a disagreement here.
Now, he's the boss, so he gets to make the final call, but I'm just saying, we don't always agree. But here's the deal. And again, I'm not Josh's agent, and I don't have a horse in this race. The bottom line is, though, when that game started against Carolina, those five guys took their very first snap on the offensive line they had
together.
Ever taken together.
That's a good point.
Ever.
Yes.
And
fair.
I'll say this. There is no unit on a football team that needs to be more cohesive and know what the guy's doing on your left and on your right more so than an offensive line.
Amen.
And nobody can tell me through three games this offensive line looks like they have any idea what the guy beside him is going to do. Simple stunts they're not picking up. Last night, Anthony Collins came in on a double team. And an outside linebacker came, never even got a hand on the guy, never even looked his way. I mean, you know, even the pass that Josh threw, he threw it late, and it was a poor decision, but he was trying to make something happen. You're already down. You know, I mean, the thing, and here's another thing. Mike Glennon, when he gets pressure, he folds like a cheap Walmart tent in a stiff breeze. I mean, there was one play where he drifted, saw the guy coming, and he just crumbled before
That's
the guy
right.
even touched the guy.
That's
I
right.
can't stand that in a quarterback.
Well, and I don't like the fact, remember against the Rams game last year when it was 3rd and 1? And he decided to, like, slide rather than muscle in at 6 foot yeah. 7, 220 pounds.
Was that the Seattle game or the Rams game?
No, it was the Seattle game.
Yeah,
I think you're correct.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah, it was
now,
it was
I'm
a road
not
game.
Taking on Earl Thomas head on either.
Yeah.
But you know what? Josh McCown would have. He
Josh
might
McCown
not,
would have.
He
yeah.
might not have been able to play the rest of the year.
They both have traits that I like, but I don't like enough of, about either one
but,
of them.
But that's your point. Until there's an elite quarterback to match up with the other quarterbacks in the division, they probably are going to be cellar
yep.
dwellers.
And, Derek, to your point, and I admitted it today in the SRS Fab Five. I was tricked. I was fooled. I was not a good reporter in terms of sniffing this out. Josh McCown did look good in the OTAs. He did look good in minicamp. He did look good in training camp. The offense clicked. There were wide-open wide receivers. And you know what got me? The defense. The defense is horrible. This is a bad Bucs defense. And it made this mediocre offense look great. And now that's coming to fruition. This defense is bad. It's been bad since OTAs and minicamp and training camp. And when the offense comes in and lights it up in practice, that's why. It's not the offense. It's the defense.
I've never seen a training camp where the offense is ahead of the defense in the first few weeks like it was this year.
That's right.
That just doesn't happen.
And actually, I'll take the full blame for this. I was under the impression that Josh was going to be that next Rich Gannon or Brad Johnson type to kind of come out of nowhere as a late bloomer. And that this offense with Tedford and speed and space and all this stuff would flourish. But it did so against a JV-level defense. And there's wide-open receivers, and McCown had all day to throw because there is no pass rush.
Well,
and there is no good coverage.
And I'll say this. That's one thing that I have noticed. I expected Josh McCown. I expected Josh McCown to respond better to pressure. Now,
yes.
we always said that during the OTAs,
and
where
like
there's nobody trying
Glennon.
To take his head off.
I think Glennon's better in terms of handling pressure.
But these guys,
he's got more poise in the pocket.
Both of them tend to crumble a little bit and get flustered. Now, again, when you got Robert Quinn and Greg Hardy bearing down on you, I'm crumbling too. I'm not saying I'm
No, that's a cop-out. Those guys play football, right? They're all professionals. Here's the thing that I don't understand. Whether it's Glennon or whether it's Josh, one of the challenges that I don't understand is whether it's Arroyo or it's Tedford, I don't really care who it is. If you get to the point where you know your line is not going to give you a prototypical pocket, then you design waggles, you do boots.
Yep.
You have to adjust your offense until the line catches up.
But especially with someone like McCown who has some ability.
But that's another problem. That's another reason why I don't think he's been given a fair shot. He has not had his offensive coordinator call a single play. And I just don't think that's fair to Josh McCown. I mean, to get a full picture of what he can and can't do. I think
Mark,
after three games, it's
Mark,
crazy to get rid of this guy.
You're not going to find an opponent in this. When I evaluate these guys, it is not close who's the better quarterback. Josh McCown is a better quarterback. But whether or not that is true doesn't matter at this point.
I agree. I think
because
you're exactly
it,
right,
at
Derek.
At this point, we have to find out whether it's true or not that Jason Light and this organization believe that Mike Glennon is the quarterback of the future. If they believe that is true. Now, I know Lovie Smith is going to stand by his man. The way some redneck girl used to sing about it. Was it Patsy Cline? No, I don't know who it was.
That
anyway.
Was Tammy Wynette.
Thank you.
Get
I figured you'd know. Listen,
stand
if you post another Elvis
you,
thing
man.
On Facebook, I'm going to punch you in the throat.
I'll post one tonight.
Jesus. But the reality is, and I like Josh. I think he's a more talented thrower of the football. I think he's a better student of the game. But
he's a great leader. He's got great leadership qualities.
But he's not leading. This is the problem. A great leader would not be doing what he's doing. I get this, and I want to love it. I do, because I love his grit. I've got friends who played with him, who've been in the rooms with him and watched him do this, right? But when you're a great leader, you cannot break the back of the team. You just can't. You've got to take the team on your shoulders somehow. Now, right now, what's ironic to me is we all know the offensive line is struggling, and let's, as we transition again, as if we know what we're doing.
Wait, let me add one stat. Doug
yes,
Williams
sir.
Threw 24 interceptions and 17 touchdowns in 1979. When they went to the NFC Championship game.
Well,
quarterbacks throw interceptions.
Oh,
it
absolutely.
Happens. Andrew Luck has 3 interceptions.
I don't
right
have a
now,
problem with the interceptions.
Including throwing one in the red zone the other night that cost them that game on Monday night.
My beef isn't with the interceptions. I'm not a stat line guy. My beef is with moving the chains. Right, he's got to make better decisions in general, not taking a sack, throwing the ball more accurately. His first 4 passes last night were very high. Now, they were catchable. I grew up in a world where if you touch the ball, you catch it.
Right.
That was the rule.
Unless you're Robert Huron.
Listen, I don't care if you have to jump, if you have to go down, if it hits you in the pads. Robert Huron's dropping the ball. The fact that he's on this team should offend anyone who can catch the football.
But I will say this about Robert Huron, though. The one thing we did notice, when he did catch the ball in training camp and OTAs, it was on usually poorly thrown balls where he went up, contorted his body, caught it behind his head. It was the easy ones that he tended to drop. That's
he's
why
got the Keyshawn Johnson
night.
Disease.
That's why last night I was so surprised to see him drop that ball.
Because that was a little bit of a difficulty.
But I mean, William Moore, right? He's the safety for the Falcons,
yes.
All pro guy. I mean, again, these things are in the back of these young kids' mind. That's another reason why I'm wondering why in the world on this stage you've got a 6-round draft pick. You're counting on this guy to catch a ball.
A 6-round draft pick who really doesn't deserve to be on the team.
Right.
But and here we are debating
the
Robert
practice
Huron.
Squad, yes.
And
because he needs to develop.
I love
but not
Vincent
the
Jackson.
Team.
Right. Vincent Jackson should be a mismatch. I don't care who he plays. We should be able to get the ball to Vincent Jackson. Mike Evans. Mike Evans, to be honest, is playing really good football,
he's
guys.
He's the best receiver
this
on the team.
This is getting
right now.
Lost in translation is that Mike Evans is balling his ass off.
Yep.
Yes,
right?
He
he's
is.
Catching the ball away from his body. He's contesting everything.
Yep.
You know, that throw from Glennon, which showed arm strength that I don't give him credit for often, because I swear to God, it's a technical thing. It's a foot. If we look at tape, we'll figure this out. Glennon has arm strength 40% of the time, and I get in fights about this all the time. But this is one of those things where Mike Evans was the guy who was out there fighting. Why is he the only one who's fighting? This is the part I don't get. People want to get on EDS, and I want to get on EDS. I love my offensive linemen to be mean and nasty and all that, but don't be stupid.
Yeah.
Right, you can't get 30 yards in penalties by being a jackass and then snap the ball over your quarterback's head.
Well, and not just that, then snapping it to your ass too.
Well, he did that well.
Listen,
I'm
going to stick up for him a little bit. Glennon's a short guy; he's only 6'6". It's easy
6'7".
To snap over that guy's head.
It's all in his neck. His neck. Now let's move to the running back position. This has been a big heated debate. My man Skip Brown, a huge Pewter Report guy.
Yep.
Love Skip, huge Bucks fan. I will never call into question his Bucks fan card at all. But one of the things I've noticed, and we talked about this off air earlier, is fans, and I will say Bucks fans, because I've lived in two different markets, Tampa and Seattle. Seattle fans, by the way, are exactly the same. Let that team go 2 years without winning something, and the 12 will be gone.
It's the 1976
it's all over.
Curse or whatever.
It's
right?
all over. But right now, And Scott and I were talking about this, Doug Martin versus Bobby Rainey, right? I like Rainey's burst. I think that all of our backs have something a little bit different. I think Doug Martin is the best of the three. Do I think he's off by 20% better? No, I think it's probably 7, 10% difference. Bobby Rainey was the wonder kid after last week.
Right.
This week, he can't hold on to the football.
It's a huge problem.
How is it that fundamentals of the one thing I would expect out of a Lovie Smith team, if nothing else, would be discipline and fundamentals? And they were nowhere to be found in Atlanta. Did they leave him in baggage?
Do you want the honest to God's truth?
I do.
Greg Schiano did a better job of teaching fundamentals than what's happening when Buck in your place right now.
I agree.
That's he was a college coach.
They used to do this take away
drill. Yep. The simplest peewee football drills over and over and over.
Yep.
Used to drive us crazy.
It was
watching
called the circuit, and it was takeaways and preventing takeaways. You know. It was the defense taking the ball away, and it was the offense preventing that with ball security drills. And they did the thing called the circuit. It was, about 10 minutes, Mark?
Yeah.
Every single player was involved, from quarterbacks to defensive linemen, the DBs to running backs, receivers, the whole gambit. And they would all take turns at every single one of these stations because you know what? You never know when Mark Barron's going to become a ball carrier. You never know when you've got a defensive player that's going to become a ball carrier and you're going to have an offensive player that has to learn how to strip the ball like Devin Hester did last night. And so Greg Schiano did this. The players kind of like chuckled at it, like, oh, this is a Rutgers College thing. The media made fun of it.
Remember Gerald McCoy last year said he hadn't been taught tackling until Greg Schiano got there. He wasn't taught how to tackle in college.
Yep.
He wasn't taught how to tackle in high school, all the way back to Pee Wee football.
That's right. And I'll say this, for as great as Lovie Smith was, you know, Bears teams were, those are the Bears teams. He's a Buccaneer head coach now. And, yes, there was some takeaways last night, but at the same time, there was 21 interceptions last year, you know, in Greg Schiano's feast or famine defense. This year there's been one, thanks to Danny Lansana picking off T.J. Yates. And
Danny Lansana.
Pardon?
The mighty Danny Lansana.
Yes, who should be the starting Sam linebacker, by the way.
I'll tell you what, in OTAs, I would have fought you physically because Casillas played his backside off in OTAs.
Yep.
But when game time... There are some ballers on this team.
There
Danny Lansana is one of them. The other one is Brandon Myers. Yes. Brandon Myers looks like just straight booty in practice. He's terrible.
Yep.
But you put the lights on, and all of a sudden, old boy can catch everything. Yeah. He still can't block his way out of a paper bag, but he can catch anything.
Well, I mean, he had over 80 receptions 2 years ago for the Raiders, including, I think, 11 against the Buccaneers in that Doug Martin game a couple years ago at the Coliseum. I mean, he's a possession receiver.
But old boy couldn't catch a cold in practice.
Well, you're right. There are guys who are gamers, you know what I mean?
And I believe Brandon Myers...
Like Daquan Bowers. He's a gamer. He started last night, and he had, what, 10? Oh, wait, no. He didn't even show up on the stat sheet.
Yeah. Oh, you got jokes over there. But Cook's got jokes.
But he had one tackle against the Rams when he started.
Yeah, so one. He's got one tackle in two games.
I'll tell you what, I'm ready to turn the page on Daquan Bowers. I mean,
We can't. We don't have anyone else to play. We'll have to go to a 3-4 simply because we don't have enough defensive linemen.
Find someone off the street.
I was going to say.
We did. Larry English, Solomon. We got those guys off the street, and they got 40 plays apiece.
And did nothing.
Yeah. Listen, edge contain was non-existent.
Actually, Scott Solomon has a forced fumble and a fumble recovery.
Right. And
He's a high motor player.
He's a high motor player, and he has one move. He has a speed edge move. That's it.
He's got the kick.
As soon as they kick step, it's over.
But he's got the kick, though.
He's got the kick fumble.
The kick fumble.
The mighty kick fumble.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that's interesting to me is, again, back to discipline. Fans, I want to get mad at them, but fans want to see improvement. Losses suck. It always sucks to wear your Bucks jerseys. I saw my friends Chris and Melody come in here. The Zellers are here. They got their logos on. We got people posting on Facebook wearing their logos to school. I wore the Bucks toboggan back in the 70s when I was 4 and 5. And
I had footy pajamas.
I had an Eckersley jersey, a 43 jersey.
Nice.
So, here, or Eckers, sorry.
You mean Eckwood.
Yeah, Eckwood, sorry. Hey, Jerry. Listen, just because you're older than me.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
Anyway, my point being, if we see improvement, usually fans are okay. And when you have a conservative coach, and this is one of the things that shocked me a little bit, anyone who knew anything about Lovie Smith knew, he will not let this team go crazy. He will try and keep everything under wraps. A loss, whether it's by 60 or by 6, is just a loss to him. Right? And I heard on the radio today people saying, well, why wasn't he upset? Mike Smith was fired up on the sideline. He's got this calm demeanor. It was just what I heard before. You guys are experts. What do you think about Lovie Smith? And has the game passed Lovie Smith by?
I don't think the game's passed Lovie Smith by. I think that he will get the team through this. The Buccaneers will win some games this year. Don't ask me which games because I don't know. But this team's not going to go 0-4 this year. The one thing that I don't like about Lovie Smith is the ultra-conservative nature. It's not so much whether you kick a field goal on 4th and 1. It's just that in this day and age, especially because it's become a quarterback's league and it's a passing league now, and you have Peyton Manning and Tom Brady and Drew Brees and Matt Ryan and prolific passers that are aggressive by nature with the ball, what still sticks in my craw is Lovie Smith in the Rams game with that field goal right before halftime, not calling the timeout with a minute 23 left, and then having 2 timeouts on the final drive. He decided, I'm going to go into halftime down 10-7 with 3 timeouts in my pocket, and that's good enough. And it's not, because you lost by 3 points, and you could have used a field goal right there, and she lost by 2. 3 would have gotten the win for the Buccaneers, and it's that type of mentality that, in my opinion, is loser mentality in 2014 in the NFL.
You've
got to be aggressive. You've got to push the envelope. Possessions are so critical and so precious in the NFL. The Buccaneers had 9 of them against the Rams. Derek, they legitimately only tried to score on 8 of them. They had a possession before halftime, and they wasted it. They got out to their own 40-yard line, about 30 yards away from field goal range, and they decided not to call timeouts. And as a result, you get what you deserve. That was John Gruden's favorite line. You get what you deserve. And you know what? If you're not going to use every possession in the NFL to try to score, then shame on you. Sean Payton doesn't do that, and Bill Belichick doesn't do that, and those guys have Super Bowl rings.
Not just every possession, Scott. Every play. The thing that typified Lovie Smith's conservative nature was also in that Rams game. When a penalty occurred, an offsetting penalty occurred, his time expired between the first and second quarter.
Great point.
And they had an opportunity to run an untimed down. Jeff Triplett, in his hillbilly accent, says, we're going to ask the coach what he wants to do. He wants to end the quarter. No offensive-minded coach in the NFL would not want one extra play. Every coach wants one extra play. Every coach but Lovie Smith, unfortunately. And that goes back. Listen, I would say Tony Dungy probably would have made the same decision.
I agree.
And when you talk about him not jumping up and down on the sidelines, where does that come from? That's the Tony Dungy mold. Tony never got excited. I guarantee his arms were crossed as Rondé Barber was running that interception back in the championship game.
And you know what? I love Tony Dungy, but let's be real. Tony Dungy would not have a Super Bowl ring if he didn't have Peyton Manning as his quarterback. Okay, there's a big difference between Trent Dilfer and Peyton Manning.
Right.
And my whole thing is that the coaches that are aggressive, the John Grudens, the Sean Paytons, you know, the Bill Belichicks, those are the guys that win Super Bowl rings.
You know what I love right now, Scott? I love behind you right now someone's calling you out. My man in the hat over there. I see you back there. It's all good. My man's calling you out. I heard you back there. He said BS. He said that Gruden would have a championship. Now, here's the interesting thing. I don't want to subvert the broadcast about Gruden won with Dungy's team, because if Gruden won with Dungy's team, then Dungy won with Mora's team. You win with the team you've got.
That's right.
That's how it gets down. Right. So all due respect, you win with the team you got. If you can motivate that set of 53 to do exemplary things, amazing things, you get to that trophy. And the thing is, we got one of those trophies, and we act like you should always get back.
I love Tony Dungy, and I'm glad that he got the Super Bowl ring in Indianapolis, but the reality of it is on that Super Bowl team, you can look at the roster, 27 players never played for Tony Dungy on that team.
Yeah.
That's more than half. Okay, more than half didn't play. And that defense was ranked number one that year, which is a feat that even in 1999, the Buccaneers weren't the number one ranked defense. Okay, so under John Gruden and Monty Kiffin, the Bucs defense was ranked number one twice. Once in 2002, once in 2005. And that's a fact.
And what's funny about all these history lessons is none of it means a hill of beans right now. I believe in my heart of hearts, which is probably covered by way too much adipose tissue, that Lovie Smith is a good coach. He was the best hire we could have made.
I agree.
But for anyone to think that Lovie Smith could come in and in a quarter of a season make this team a Super Bowl contender, you might actually be living in Colorado because you're using way too much medical marijuana. Right, this is going to take some time. Hey, vote how you vote, brother. Do what you do. But what I'm saying is this takes time. We have Gerald McCoy out. We have Mason Foster out. We have Doug Martin out. We got a bunch of guys out. We are thin to begin
Michael
with. We
Johnson,
knew our deposition.
Adrian, I want to ask you,
Michael Johnson might as well be a damn ghost. He has not shown up even when he's been healthy.
I want to ask you a question right now. Who are the great players on this defense, Derek? Who are the true?
Gerald McCoy, Levante David. Done.
Two, right?
Done. End
Two.
Of list.
Okay. Now, and Lovie Smith inherited them, right?
Yes.
Tony Dungy inherited how many? Warren Sapp, Hardy Nickerson, John Lynch, Derek Brooks. Four.
So what you're saying is Sam Weich really deserves that Super Bowl.
We should call Sam Weich up immediately.
Sam Weich's the hero.
No, what I'm saying is Tony Dungy, he walked into a situation that was incredibly favorable. He walked into a situation that already had two Hall of Famers on that team. Did he play a role in molding their careers and giving them success? Absolutely. But the key thing is they were on the team. Hardy Nickerson was on the team. John Lynch was on the team. And they did draft Rondé Barber and a couple other players that helped them. And they did sign Simeon Rice that helped them get there. But the reality is this. Right now, you said two guys. I said four guys. Four is twice as many as two.
I did that math. I'm from Polk County, but I can do that. I'm good.
Okay. You know
Wait
what I'm saying?
A second. Do that again.
Two, yeah, two, is, two,
four
two
is,
and two.
What is that?
Four
two
is
and two
twice
is four.
As many as two.
Yeah, I don't
and
see
And the
it.
Reason I say that is because Tampa Bay had stars on every level. Safety, John Lynch, the defensive back. Linebackers, Derek Brooks, Warren Sapp was on the defensive line.
But they weren't stars in 96, and you make a good point. He molded those guys. I don't know that Derek Brooks
here.
Is a Hall of Famer if Tony Dungy doesn't come
to
this team.
I agree. But the thing is you can't deny that those guys weren't talented. They were absolutely talented.
But I
look on the team now and I say, where's the talent on defense outside of Levante David and Gerald McCoy?
Well, I you know what? One of the reasons Lovie Smith came here, didn't listen really to any other offers, is because he looked at exactly what you're saying, the three technique and the will linebacker.
Yep.
He saw those two things and thought, this is what Tony had, this is what I have.
Yep.
Now,
but he doesn't have a Hardy Nickerson in middle linebacker.
I agree.
He doesn't have a John Lynch, a strong safety. I mean, Mark Barron's not lived up to expectations.
If you had John Lynch in strong safety right now, John Lynch would be sitting on the sideline suspended. Done.
That's true.
His style of football doesn't work anymore. Now, Mark Barron, when we drafted him as a rookie, did some things that we all raised our eyebrows to and went, wow, I have not seen a guy cover that much field. Right? We talked about it afterwards, like, holy cow, this guy's got something. But we've got to take these guys that have good raw material and mold them into greater players. And that's what the coaching staffs have not done yet.
And that may be the biggest shock. Scott, you probably will agree with this. When I looked at this coaching staff that Lovie Smith hired, the Joe Cullens of the world, Hardy Nickerson's, Gil Bird's, I thought, this is a great defensive staff. Leslie Frazier is the defensive coordinator.
I was very excited about the staff.
I thought this defense has got to automatically, even if they don't even hardly coach him up, have to be better than the defense last year. And it's just the opposite.
I agree with you because Mason Foster is an okay middle linebacker. Not that Hardy Nickerson would take his game to the next level. Maybe we haven't seen that yet. Maybe we haven't seen enough yet because it's three games in.
We've seen two games of Mason Foster at this
point.
Yeah.
But let's, again, I always play devil's advocate and people hate me on Twitter because I love to do this. I did it last night.
That's not why they hate you on Twitter.
Well, that's true. Tony Dungy's team in 1996 started 0-6 and 1-7.
Right.
They were not the Buccaneers of the Buccaneers through the first eight games of that
year.
But none of those
games that they lost were by a margin of 56 points at any point.
They lost
the
first one 34-3. But here's the deal. In those first three losses, the Buccaneers have averaged given up 32 points because of the 56. But here's a Greg Aumann fact for you. I figured out last night.
27.3.
Now, here's the deal, though. You know what the difference was? And Warren Sapp talks about it all the time. That game in San Diego, when Warren Sapp decided we're not going to be the Buccaneers anymore.
Right.
What player on this football team is going to be the Warren Sapp and is going to get tired of the crap and say no more?
Based on the article that you guys said, it's going to be McDonald. Isn't that the guy that came into the locker room?
Here's the deal. Let me just paint the scenario. Open locker room. The PR staff jokingly said it's a little thin right now, which meant there was nobody there. Not one person when we walk in there. Clinton McDonald's hanging around.
Hold on, Mark. I want you to explain to the listeners out there what open locker room is, why it exists, and what you guys get to hear in an open locker room, because a lot of people don't understand that. We talk about it because I get to know what you guys do. But tell people what open locker room is and who gets to go and who's expected to show up.
Well, you've got your accredited media that gather in the media center there at One Buccaneer Place. A nice place. They give us Wi-Fi, desks, cubicles, whatever you want to call it. We're there every day. The regulars from the Times, the Trib, the AP, the Ledger.
Fox accredited Sports, media. Report. I get it. Pound your chest,
There's one outfit we're not mentioning, but they're there most of the time. But anyway, we have a period, a 45-minute period during the week where we're allowed to go into open locker room where the players are. It's either before practice or after practice. And it's before practice or after practice, one or the other, depending on the day. And we have an opportunity to interview the players. And if they're in the locker room, they're free game. Now, they don't have to talk. Vincent Jackson's notorious for talking once a week, if that. Today, he didn't talk.
For 5 minutes.
For 5 minutes, and he's king
That's
of cliches.
That's all you get, Vincent.
But anyway, today there was nobody in open locker room, which we jokingly said it's going to be dead. I mean, who wants to go face the media? I don't blame the guys. I wouldn't want to stand up and talk to the media after the performance last night. In fact, it was so bad that T.J. Reeves, who works for the Buccaneer Radio Network and the Buccaneers, could only find two players that were willing to talk on the radio broadcast last night.
Wow.
Two. And Danny Lansana, who had a pick six, and Mike Glennon. Those were the only two players he talked to in the post game, and I've never seen so few players. But anyway, so we're waiting, and we're standing around the middle. And all of a sudden, here comes Clint McDonald walks in, and the PR staff said, Clinton's available. And he spent about 5 or 6 minutes, and he was not happy. Here's a guy who just came from a Super Bowl-winning team. Imagine how he feels playing on this team right now. But to his credit, Clint McDonald said, I didn't do my job last night. I didn't control my gap. I wasn't disciplined in what I was doing, and it was a snowball effect, and it just got out of hand. I have a lot of respect for Clint McDonald.
A guy that voluntarily wanted to come here from Seattle from winning a Super Bowl.
Right.
You know, and albeit getting more money in Tampa Bay.
But not a lot. I think he's only making $2.5 million. I mean, it's a great deal.
But how about Logan Mankins, right? How about a guy that was used to playing with Tom Brady, used to going to the playoffs every year, contending for Super Bowls? He's traded right before the start of the season to Tampa Bay. He does not look like a happy camper.
But I will say
this. You know what would make him happier? Block more.
Well,
zero. I can't say what I would normally say. I do not care about how happy you are when you're traded.
Yep.
I have ultimate respect for Logan Mankins. Everyone I know in the NFL thinks nothing but high things of him, and that's great.
This but he's always been a
business.
Patriot.
I don't care.
He's always been a Patriot.
If you don't want to be a Buck, retire.
But he's ball. I think he's playing well.
He's well by comparison. Hell yeah. I mean, by comparison, a rock would be better than our offensive lineman.
The guy's a warrior. I mean, you can't tell me most offensive linemen wouldn't have taken that Rams game off after that knee injury that he had the first week.
Yeah,
and nobody
would
have blamed him.
They would opt out. You know, they would opt out.
And Logan Mankins, you can't get that guy off the field. Didn't he play half a year with a torn ACL for the Patriots one year?
He did. Yeah.
Listen, I'm not calling into question his strength, his intestinal fortitude. What I'm saying is I don't care if he's happy or not. You know what's not happy is as a fan of the game.
But wait, $6 million makes a lot of guys happy. And actually it's
maybe,
$10 million this year because he's getting $4 million from the Patriots.
That's all relative. I mean, these guys, they get a 2.5 to 4 year career typically. He's on borrowed time. That's great. I don't begrudge them their money. I wouldn't want to sit in an ice tub and be not able to know my kids' names when I'm 40.
Right.
Right. That's an argument. I'm not going to pull the Larry Lunchpail crap that a lot of people pull. They get paid market value, and that's great. But what I want to see is I want to see this team act like they're fired up. Someone on the call last night said the Bucks were caught flat-footed. I watched no edge contain. I watched poor discipline. I watched no gap responsibility. This defense is predicated on knowing your job. You don't know your buddy's job. You know your job, you do your job, and good things happen. Warren Sapp said it all the time.
Yep.
You do your job and let everyone else do theirs.
That was Greg Schiano's mantra.
Lovie has
year.
Got
do
to get
job.
These guys to know that, and
yeah.
right now they don't.
And you know what? And to be fair, and I've criticized Lovie and the Tampa 2 defense, but to be fair, that does take some time. It even took guys like Hardy Nickerson, a seasoned veteran, you know, in 1996.
Derek said it right before the season started. Don't expect this to be the 2002 season.
Yeah.
Buccaneer defense.
Yeah. It was a different Derek.
It's going to take half
Brooks.
A season.
Oh, him, yeah.
No, not
half
you.
Half a season for do that. But you're right.
You didn't say that. You expected it game one.
But you know, Warren Sapp did say that. Like, whenever there was a big run, whenever they'd huddle up on the next play, what would he say? He would say, "Who's gap? Who give up the gap?" You know? And he wanted to know.
The eye in the sky don't lie.
And you had to be accountable as to, yep, that was me, you know? Because that's what Warren demanded. But, you know, you mentioned it. Who's going to stand up and be that fiery leader? And to be honest, that's been my biggest beef with the Buccaneers ever since they let Warren Sapp go. And I know that they wanted Anthony McFarland to be that three technique, but there has not been
There's
an no ass
nasty.
Kicker
no
on,
nasty
this defense.
On this team. I agree.
Chris Hovan, when he got here, he had the persona, but his play didn't always back it up. The thing I liked about Hardy Nickerson, and he was really the ultimate tempo setter for me, when Hardy Nickerson called a players-only meeting, before the Chicago Bears game, you could count on Hardy to have 18 tackles the next day against the Chicago Bears.
Right.
Okay? There have been others, and I'm not going to name names, but there have been others that would call a players-only meeting and then go out the next day and have, like, 3 or 4 tackles.
Right.
And didn't back it up. So, in my opinion, that's what's missing on this team. You know, Gerald McCoy is not that fire and brimstone kind of guy. Levante David certainly isn't. And the problem is, those are your two best players. And back in the Buccaneer glory days, two of the best players were Hardy Nickerson and were Warren Sapp.
Right.
And John Lynch was your gentleman, you know, leader, and Derek Brooks was your gentleman leader.
But John was nasty on the field.
He was
we don't
nasty
see any nasty.
Field.
You know who the nastiest player on the field is right now? Luke Stalker. Luke Stalker, did you
oh,
see
hey,
him?
Listen.
He's
did
the dirtiest player.
But did you see him?
He's the dirtiest player.
Did you see him kill that guy in the Rams game after he gave up that block punt?
Yep.
Maybe the best hit I've seen in the last 5 years. Then last night he headbutts a guy.
Yep.
Second dirtiest player, Evan Dietrich Smith. But that's because he was embarrassed because he got his ass kicked all night.
And he had 2 fumbles.
Yes.
Two really, really bad fumbles.
Yeah, bad.
You guys bring up a really interesting discussion point. And I want to make sure we focus our Bucks. First of all, I got a lovely kiss from that young lady right there. And said, we're doing a good job. So the young lady in the corner, I appreciate that. But
By the way, if anybody's got any comments and wants to share their thoughts, we got an extra mic. We can get Scott off the mic for a couple minutes. So,
yes.
Skip, get over here.
Skip ain't going to talk. He's scared. He's still trying to figure out whether Bobby Rainey is the man. Oh, wait. No, he didn't say anything, did he? Oh, a whole week, and you're pounding my chest about Bobby Rainey is the answer. He's the truth.
Hey,
you can't
Scott
be on Facebook
too.
Enough.
Scott
and where'd you
too.
Go last night? Reed,
Bobby Rainey
watching Gone
the
with
man.
The Wind. Get out of here with that noise, Skip Brown.
Bobby Rainey stole the man.
No.
Hey,
yes,
listen.
No.
And Scott and I
talked
about this
really
off the mic.
We never really got into the running back
what?
Issue. We never really got into the running back
oh,
issue.
Oh, we'll do that. Hey, yeah. We can do that right now. You cannot judge this game minute to minute. And this is one of the things that I love Skip Brown. He's a smart and great fan. I have nothing but respect for this man.
He's okay.
But one of the things I think fans have to realize is you cannot judge minute to minute in this game. You can't pound your chest because the guy who is the backup that you're all excited about, let's say, does good week one, because week two still has to happen.
That's right.
Yes, we can. Sure. I'm going to transition to you real quick while I lower the volume.
Well, I'll tell you what. When you look at, you know, at Bobby Rainey, he's got it. He's got the explosion. He's got the vision. He's got the agility. He can create on his own. And that's the thing I like about him is he has the ability that he doesn't have to have perfect blocks all the time.
True.
And I think with Doug Martin and with Mike James, they've got to have some good blocking to spring them, because they can do some damage in the second level. But sometimes you have to get past that first level, and that's the one thing Rainey brings to the table. He has fumbled the ball uncharacteristically. He's got three fumbles in three games. One in the Panthers game, it was costly. He had two last night that were very costly.
Didn't Adrian Peterson go 2 years without a fumble? You can't have three in three games. You can't have two in one game. That's just inexcusable by a running back. But I agree with your point. This guy can make things
on
his own.
He's the only guy making things happen.
I agree.
Now, he's not averaging 1 yard per carry.
Doug Martin is great when he gets to that second level. That's when his vision kicks in. That's when he can make guys miss.
It's getting to the second level that's the problem.
But that's the offensive line, though. The offensive line, you've got to be able to open basic holes. And even Bobby Rainey last week, he had 8 negative runs. Even though he had 144 yards, he still had 8 negative runs. That's because he was getting hit as soon as he got the ball. Which just, to me, speaks to this offensive line is just not good. I think this was the fundamental mistake that this front office and this coaching staff made, was not addressing the offensive line and not settling on 5 guys and working with 5 guys. Because now, guess what? The Buccaneers just played their 3rd preseason game with the offensive line yesterday.
That's a good point.
Their 3rd preseason game with the offensive line.
But you know what? They did address the offensive line. They went with athleticism over physicality. Here's the premise. The premise was this was going to be an up-tempo, no-huddle type of offense. Okay? I mean, you know, that's one thing that the Buccaneers even told the media to hush-hush about during the offseason was, don't use the words no-huddle. Don't mention that.
Right.
Because we want to save this as a surprise. Okay? Well, the problem is you're not even running it now.
Well,
we haven't seen it. But they wanted an athletic offensive line to be able to, after a 25-yard gain, run down the field and call a play within 15 seconds.
What, Donald Penn could have done
that.
No,
he couldn't have done
that. No? You don't think so? Davin Joseph on one leg?
Absolutely not.
No? Okay,
Zutaw
never mind.
I take
that
back. But the problem is so you build this athletic offensive line for this up-tempo, you know, no-huddle offense, and you're not even using it. And
that I think I just think that's got to be part of the Tedford
thing.
Thing.
Is here you have this supposedly athletic offensive line that is not nearly as physical as they need to be. Case in point against the Rams game, you know, you run Mike James twice, who's your power back, right? You run him twice on 2nd and 2, on 3rd and 2, and he gets no yards in either carry.
And are you talking about the tall sweeps left?
I'm talking
last night, 4 carries, 4 yards for Mike James.
Yes.
So here's one of the things that happens. And Steve White, when I'm fortunate enough to have him on the show, and shout out to Steve White, because if you're not following at SGW94, you're not a Bucks fan. You better toughen up, too, because you're not going to take your crap. But if you've got one side of the line that can block, and that's what we got, guys, don't kid yourself. We got one side of the line that can block. The only time you can run ISO or power is left, and you run it when you're in 21, and you run it with Luke Stocker and a tight end. And that's the answer. That's it. It's over. The discussion's done. And if you don't know what I just said, you're not smart enough to understand this game at that level. That's not an offense. I don't mean you're a bad person. I mean, go read some books, watch some film, and then come back and we'll talk football. If you don't understand that, I don't want to hear what you think about the running back position. If you don't understand that, I don't want to hear what you think about the offensive line position. Right? That's what this game is about. You've got Logan Mankins on the left side of this line, Luke Stocker, the only tight end on this team who can block, and you can then run these things. The zone blocking scheme they want to implement is dance. It's choreography. And the beauty of that is Denver could put any back in the world behind that line when it was dancing, and they got 1,000 yards.
That's right. Good
every
point.
Time.
Same thing with the Redskins. Redskins did it for a long time.
But you've got to get to the point where you dance. And we're not there yet. Mark, you said it earlier. You said it beautifully.
That chemistry
issue
is real.
We got to get the chemistry.
Yeah.
And it's simple. If you've coached zone blocking, what you'll hear is if you're on the right, if you're going zone right, it's right foot, left foot. If you're going left, it's left foot, right foot. It seems simple. But you've got to dance together. If you're not dancing together, someone's going to come through, And I don't care if you're Barry Sanders, you're getting hit in the mouth, and the play is over.
Speaking of dancing, do they have dancing outside after this?
I don't know. I'll dance outside later.
I see a few people I want to dance with if we do have dancers.
If Melody keeps standing here, I'm going to dance. Oh, I'm sorry, Chris. My bad, dude.
Oh.
Hey, listen, big shout out to Keel and Curly. We're here, Plant City, Florida. I've got a beer flight that I've been enjoying. There's a blueberry vanilla something that was delicious. These guys have been amazing. We've had a great time so far. Thanks to all the Bucks fans out here supporting us. Thanks for coming out here. For you people who aren't Bucks fans, that's okay. Enjoy the drinks. Enjoy the wine, the beer, the Smoking Aces barbecue. It's been a great time so far. Scott, Mark, I want you to tune your aim here to the future. We got the Steelers coming up. I hate the Steelers ever since Lee Flowers. I still want to fight Lee Flowers.
With the paper champions?
The paper champions comment. What do we have in store next week? We get a little bit of a break.
Yeah.
What do we have in store? Do you think this team has the intestinal fortitude to rebound and find some heart? Or are we in for just an absolute year of misery?
I think that the Buccaneers, I mean, what define misery? Is misery 4-12? Because if that's your definition of misery, they're in for 4-12. They're in for misery. What the Bucs are going to face is another varsity quarterback in Ben Roethlisberger. Okay, you faced one last week with Matt Ryan. You're going to have one again next week with Ben Roethlisberger. So, in my opinion,
then Drew Brees after that,
and then Drew Brees, yeah. And as scary as Matt Ryan was with 87.5%, I think Drew Brees is an upper echelon quarterback, better than Matt Ryan. It's scary to think what he could do against this Buccaneers secondary. We saw a glimpse of it last year, right? In the last game
of the year, 42-17, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, and I think last year's defense was actually better than this year's, unfortunately. But what can we expect? I think we can expect a closer game score-wise because I don't think Pittsburgh's offense is prolific, but I think that Ben Roethlisberger can do enough with his arm and his feet to extend the play and convert third downs. And third down has been a real problem, Derek, for this Tampa Bay defense. So until they get the third down issue settled, start breaking up some passes, start getting sacks on the money down, which is third down. Hey, I love the fact that Akeem Spence and Dane Fletcher split a sack. That's great. But we need that on third downs if you're a Buccaneers fan. You have to get off the field on third down. And that's the one thing this Tampa 2 defense is a shell of its former self, is the sacks aren't coming on third down. There hasn't been many, just three, or actually four now. But they have to get sacks on third down. That's the money now.
I don't know what to expect in that game, but I'll say this. What we see in that game will determine the rest of this season. And I say that because the Atlanta Falcons went to Cincinnati last week and got smacked in the mouth. They got out physical. They got their asses kicked up and down the field. And they responded by coming out and doing the same thing to the Buccaneers. Will the Buccaneers respond to getting their asses kicked and smacked in the mouth this next Sunday? They've got 10 days. They've got time to rest. They've got time to look at film. They've got time to be angry. They've got time to decide what type of football team they're going to be. And to me, if they go out and they – I don't know that they're going to win or can win. I'm just saying they can't go out and get smacked in the mouth again. If they go out and smack back and they still lose, I can live with that. And that gives a little bit of hope. One of the best things Justin Pawlowski said this morning on the air was, what's so frustrating the Buccaneer fans when they woke up this morning is they don't see hope. They don't have a young quarterback to groom. They see Glennon and they see McCown. They see if they do draft a quarterback next year, that guy taking 2 years. There's not that hope. And a game like last night took a lot of that hope away. Yeah. To me, they can respond, go out, play a great game against Pittsburgh, and that'll give that little bit of spark and hope back and maybe somehow mirror themselves to that 96 Buccaneer team that finished, what, were they 6-10 or 7-9? Either way, they were able to turn things around after 1-8.
And you know what? Here's the thing. The NFL is a talent league. The most talented players play at this level. And if you have a talented quarterback, you're probably going to go far. You're probably going to get the playoffs. This is not a heart league. This is a talent league. You can have all the heart and want to. There's a lot of guys that have more heart and want to that are not NFL players.
Daniel Taylor-Nison last year.
Yeah.
Heart guy. Terrible.
Guys. Right.
Doesn't matter.
Terrible player.
Rudy doesn't work in the NFL.
It doesn't. It works in college. It works in high school.
Pop Warner.
It works in my Pop Warner League. I coached the South Pasco Predators junior peewee team. We beat, an all-athletic team last week. We're not an athletic team. We beat them on heart and hustle, to steal an old Rays phrase. But the NFL is all about talent. And so I think this team can rebound and be as positive and fight and have that vigor all they want. But at the end of the day is, you know, is this guard more talented than this defensive tackle? Is this wide receiver more talented than this cornerback? Because when you have those types of matchups, this is a matchup league. And talent usually wins 9 times out of 10 in this league. And I just don't think the Buccaneers are as talented as we proclaim them to be and as fans thought they would be and as even the Buccaneers thought they would be.
And with all due respect, I think that the talent level difference at the NFL level is so minuscule in almost every position. There are exceptions. The Peyton Mannings, the Drew Breeses of the world, even though the other, you know, 30 quarterbacks are so much better than anyone. You know, I get a kick out of fans who say, oh, that guy sucks. Listen, you try and catch a pass from a third-string quarterback.
Austin Davis.
He will break your hands.
Yeah. Right.
Right. You do not understand what these guys do. They are not human. They're different than us.
Yeah.
That said, the difference in talent is so small that whether you call it heart or coaching, the Philadelphia Eagles, when they put together the dream team, had all the talent in the world, and they sucked hind tit.
You have to have
There's
the chemistry.
No other way. That was for you, by the way, you hot blonde in the front.
You have to have the chemistry and the cohesion. There's no doubt about it. Football is the ultimate team sport for that reason, Derek. I don't think baseball is that much of a team sport. Certainly basketball has really become kind of a one-on-one type of a matchup. Football, you have to have that chemistry. You can have the 5 most talented offensive linemen, as Mark, you know, accurately said. If they don't, you know, have
play
that
together.
Cohesion
yeah,
and,
sure.
and gelling, you know, you can have 5 fingers all you want, but you have to make a fist.
You go,
to
Bruce
be able to
Lee.
Punch somebody.
You
right?
go, Bruce Lee. I like it.
So there has to be that teamwork, and we've seen those dream teams. The Redskins, you know, the Philadelphia Eagles, teams that have, quote-unquote, won the offseason. And unfortunately, I think that's part of the problem. I think part of the problem is you know, Herm Edwards and the like said, oh, the Buccaneers are the team to watch. They've had the most turnover from that 4-12 underachieving Buccaneer team last year.
That's a great point, Scott.
And that was a Buccaneer team that lost so many close games. Now they have more talent, so they're going to win. But I don't think that they have had the talent, and they certainly haven't been a cohesive team.
I don't know. And they've had the losses as a result.
Just
because you have turnover and you pay a guy more money than the guy that you replace him with doesn't mean he's a better football player or a better fit for your team.
And I don't know that it was the turnover. You guys know better than I. There are guys that are respected in this league, and there are guys that aren't. Lovie Smith is respected. My Chicago Bears fans up there are like, hey, are you guys tired of Lovie's shtick yet? Sorry, I'm not. I actually like Lovie's shtick.
Yeah.
I think he's a heck of a coach. I think you give him time. But the question becomes, will the fan of today give a coach time? And what I've seen is the answer is no.
Well, here, let me just say this. Yeah. And you might be going ready to say the same thing. Lovie Smith knows more about football. He's forgot more than any of us will ever know. I understand that. I'm not going to sit here and say I'm an expert like some of these Twitter guys.
Well, I am.
But the bottom line is he's got to adapt. It's not 1996.
That's
it's
a great
not
point.
1997. It's not 1999. You've got to change with the times.
The game will pass you by.
Sure.
Exhibit A, Joe Gibbs, second time around. Exhibit A, B, Marty Schottenheimer. Exhibit C, Dick Vermeil, you know. And those are older gray hair type coaches, but at the same time, the game passed them by and they're no longer in it as a result. I'll say this, about Lovie Smith. I think he was the right hire. I understand why that he was hired, but you can't live in the past. You can't say from a marketing perspective, well, it was better when the Buccaneers had that great defense and that Tampa 2, and we played buck ball and we contended for the playoffs. History doesn't repeat itself as often as we would think.
Right.
And you can't make history repeat itself. It has to kind of organically do it. And I think this feels like a forced situation. Well, he was on Tony's staff, so he knows the culture. Well, fine, that's the culture. But guess what? The rule changes in the league have greatly impacted the game of football. When it wasn't Trent Dilfer-powered offense. It was a Warwick Dunn and Mike Alstott-powered offense. The running game was more prevalent back then. It was a WD-40. It was more of a balanced offense. Now, this is more of a passing league. And as a result, you have to change and evolve. Yeah. And that's my concern with Lovie Smith is does he have it within him to change and evolve?
Well, one other thing before we get out of here that I want to say, for those that, and there was a lot of people There's people on our message boards. There's people on Twitter, all over social media saying, fire Lovie Smith. First of all, even if you think that's the right decision, it's not going to happen. They're still paying Greg Schiano for 2.5 more years, $9 million he's owed. They just finished paying Raheem Morris last year.
Right.
Lovie Smith signed a 5-year, $25 million deal. He's not being fired this year. If they go 0-16, all bets are off, but that's not going to happen.
If you fire Lovie Smith after this year, which is not going to happen unless, like you said, they go winless, then you have to. But if you fire Lovie Smith, that's $5 million a year, plus Shiano's $3 million. That's $8 million a year in dead coach money, plus you got to hire somebody else
right,
and pay that.
And none of that matters. Guys, here's the thing. Please, I implore you. You guys are the leaders in Buccaneer coverage. You have 16,000-ish Twitter followers if you're
almost,
not following
almost
yet.
Almost 17.
Almost 17? I thought you were almost 16.
Almost 16.
Oh, sorry.
You're getting
at Pewter Report.
Well, please, after tonight,
please
we'll have 17.
Do not let fans take the easy road out. This guy is a good coach.
He is.
You don't give him 3 games. You give him 3 years.
But
I have run. I have run 5 companies, and I always equate companies to football. You don't turn things around in 3 weeks.
That's right.
And people say, "Well, 9 weeks."
But
it doesn't matter.
Here's the problem with Lovie Smith. This franchise has not been to the playoffs since 2007. He has that working against him. This team has not won a postseason game since 2002. He has that working against him. Are both of those situations his fault? Absolutely not. But at $5 million a year, as an experienced coach who has taken a team to the playoffs, who was fired after winning 10 games, which sounds awfully great in Tampa Bay right now to win 10 games, and to take a team to the Super Bowl with that experience, that resume, that quality as a coach, you're expected to win maybe not now, but sooner rather than later. There's more pressure on Lovie Smith to win right now than there was in Greg Schiano when he came into town.
And sure. I guarantee Lovie doesn't care.
In every year that goes by, the pressure mounts and builds. And you know what? The real damning thing about this, and I don't want to call out Buccaneer fans, but there will not be a lot of Buccaneer fans in the stands for that Ravens game.
Who cares?
That's the next home game. But you know who cares? The Glazers care. Because perception matters to them. Their ticket base matters to them. Selling luxury suites and club seats. All this stuff matters to them because this is a business to them. And,
what?
And that's the damning thing, is that loss on Sunday or on Thursday night was catastrophic. If they lose again on Sunday, if they lose in New Orleans again, if they're what 0-5 heading into that Ravens game, that's going to be a sparse crowd, and it's not going to look good. It's not going to feel good.
When have we not had a sparse crowd? Listen, I know I am accused of being the fan bashing podcaster, and I don't care because I am. Because you know what? We got 30 to 35,000 fans here. I'll put up against Green Bay fans every day of the week. They've been there in the sombrero. They'll be there to the next stadium. But
the
if
great
the
thing
Glazers,
about that diehard fan base, like you said, that 30,000 hardcore,
they're not going anywhere.
Is win or lose, those Buck fans are there. They're on PewterReport.com. They're listening to WhatTheBuck.net. They're showing up on Sunday. They're believing in their team, even though the odds are stacked against them. And I have much respect for them. But the problem is, that's half the stadium. Where's the other half?
And you know what? That's up to
the
Glazers. That's up to the Glazers. Hey, listen, I want to thank everyone who came out to Keel and Curley tonight. I want to thank Mark and Scott from PewterReport.com. The new PewterReport.com website is phenomenal. If you haven't been out there, get to PewterReport.com and check it out. The new features look great. The comment system specifically is excellent. It's very easy to interact with you guys. You had a great chat today. Had 100 people in your chat today, right, Scott?
More people in our Pewter Report chat than we've ever seen. We have a new Bucks blog section on our website where we can hit quick-hitting stories in addition to doing our articles. So just kind of a more of a reason to check out PewterReport.com. More updates, more frequent news, quicker format to deliver that news to you. So it's great. Between the message boards, our new PR Bucks blog, and the articles, I mean, we have all the Bucks information I think Bucks fans need.
And we'll have this podcast up later tonight or tomorrow.
The podcast will be up probably tonight. I'm going to have a number of beverages this evening, so it may be tomorrow morning. Hey, I'm just saying. Hey, listen, I know you're trying to score, Fish. I know you're trying to score, but you are not nearly attractive enough. But oh, Shepard, I got to buy you beers, don't I? Yeah, because he should not be on the team. But our receivers are so bad that he made the team.
He's the gunner on special teams.
Anyway,
that's the only reason he's here.
Big shout out to you guys. We'll get the podcast up. PeterReport.com, phenomenal. Follow at PeterReport. If you want to follow at with the Bucks, you can as
well. No, don't.
But But one point I do want to make is if you do come to our tailgates, we are the only Hall of Fame tailgate in Tampa. And
best tailgate
we are wrapping up. We are wrapping up our drive for One Voice Foundation, which is pediatric cancer research. We are trying to get to $5,000 for them this
month, Do you still have the auction going on right now?
The auction is going on.
Tell people where they can find that at.
I will drop the URL out there. It's at 32auctions.com. I'll drop the URL. Follow us at What the Buck. We're hoping to get $5,000 for these guys. Listen, every day 46 children are diagnosed with cancer and 7 children die from pediatric cancer. It is impossible to find someone who has not been touched by this disease. The folks at One Voice realize that when one child is diagnosed, the whole family is diagnosed, and they take care of them, and they're right here in your town. Those women and men in that organization are amazing, and that's why we support them. And we thank PeterReport.com for supporting us in doing so. So thank you, guys. Thanks to Keel and Curly. You guys have been amazing. The beers, the wines, the Smoking Aces barbecue, the whole feel. This place is phenomenal. If you don't come out here, you're crazy. We will see you guys next month on the next WhatThePeterReport.com podcast. Mark Scott, we are out of here.
See you.
Thank you.